Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today we are going back, way back to 1935, the middle of the New Deal, to look at a Supreme Court case that we're still talking about today, Panama Refining Cuffy Ryan. This was a landmark case. It marked the very first time that the Supreme Court decided to strike down a piece of FDR's New Deal legislation.
It was a big one.
Yeah.
And you know, this case, it's not just about oil and gas regulations or the Great Depression. At its heart, it's really about this fundamental question of power in the U.S. government. And specifically, we're talking about something called the non-delegation doctrine.
Okay, so the non-delegation doctrine, what is that?
So this is the idea that Congress can't just give away its lawmaking power to the president, you know, without setting some very clear guidelines.
Okay, so let's set the scene here. It's 1933. The Great Depression has a grip on the nation.
Right.
And Congress is trying everything they can to fight back. They passed this massive law called the National Industrial Recovery Act, or the NIRA.
Yeah, trying to get the economy back on track.
Exactly. The goal is to just get things moving again.
Mm.
Now, there's this one part of the NIRA that's really important for our story today, Section 9C.
Right.
This section basically says that the president can stop oil that's been produced over a certain limit from being shipped across state lines. Pretty powerful stuff, right?
It is, and that's precisely where the trouble started. You see, armed with this new power, President Roosevelt, he issues what's called an executive order, Executive Order 6199, and that effectively, puts a halt to some of these oil shipments.
No, thanks.
Now, naturally, this didn't sit well with everyone, especially the oil companies, companies like, Panama Refining Company, right?
Right.
They saw this as a huge power grab by the president, and they weren't going to take it lying down, so they decided to,
fight back.
Fight back. They took it to court.
So this is where things really heat up. We've got a full-blown legal battle on our hands. First, the district court actually sides with Panama Refining and blocks those oil regulations. Then, boom, the circuit court comes in, overturns that decision, and just throws the whole case out.
Yeah, lots of back and forth. Really shows you how high the stakes were.
Definitely high stakes.
Yeah.
So the case ends up at the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. All eyes are on the justices. Everyone's wondering, is Section 9C even constitutional?
Right. Is this even allowed?
Yeah. So what did they say?
Well, the court came back with a pretty resounding no. In an 8-1 decision, they declared Section 9C unconstitutional. They basically said Congress gave the president too much power, you know, too much of a blank check without any real limits.
So it wasn't that they were against Congress giving power to the president in general?
Not really, no. Their main issue was the lack of guidance they gave him. Chief Justice Hughes, he wrote the majority opinion.
Okay.
And he pointed out that this Section 9C, it didn't really say anything about when or why the president could actually restrict these oil shipments. It was just, do whatever you want, you know?
Ah, I see. So the court was basically saying, hey, Congress, you can't just abdicate your responsibility here. You have to give the president some guidelines, some rules to follow.
Exactly. They were deeply concerned about maintaining that balance of power, that separation of powers, which is really, a key principle in our constitutional system.
Right, right. Checks and balances. So they actually even quoted Article 1 of the Constitution in their opinion.
He did, yeah.
Which very clearly states that Congress has all legislative powers.
Right. All lawmaking power belongs to Congress. And they argued that if you allow this kind of broad delegation of power, well, you're essentially undermining the whole structure of our government.
Makes sense. So what you're saying is the court wasn't saying delegation is completely off the table, just that it can't be a free-for-all. There have to be some rules.
Exactly. You know, Congress needs to set some ground rules, some criteria or standards, something to guide the president's actions and make sure that, you know, the executive branch isn't overstepping its boundaries.
That's interesting. It makes me wonder, though, wouldn't requiring like super specific rules from Congress just tie their hands? Especially during emergencies like, you know, the Great Depression, when things need to move fast.
Oh, that's a good point. And that's a tension that always comes up when we talk about the non-delegation doctrine. But the court seemed to be saying, look, even in a crisis, you can't just ignore the Constitution. Checks and balances are important, you know?
Right. But wait, you said it was an 8-1 decision, right?
I did, yeah.
So there was one dissenter, one justice,
right,
who didn't agree with the majority.
Right.
Who was that?
Justice Cardozo.
Okay, Justice Cardozo.
Right.
What was his take on all of this?
Well, he argued that the NIRA, when you look at it as a whole, actually did provide enough guidance for the president. He pointed to the big picture goals mentioned in Section 1, like, you know, getting rid of unfair competition and promoting economic recovery, he felt like those were enough instructions, you know?
Interesting. So he's basically saying the president was trying to do what Congress wanted, even if the specifics weren't spelled out.
Yeah, he thought that the president was just trying to carry out the spirit of the law, even if Section 9C wasn't, you know, super detailed.
Okay, but I'm guessing the majority wasn't buying it.
Not really, no. They argued back, saying those big picture goals in Section 1, those apply to the entire NIRA, not just Section 9C specifically. So when it came to this oil regulation issue, they still felt the president had too much power. They really wanted to make sure there was accountability and that no one branch of government had too much power.
So Panama refining, it really shows this struggle to find the right balance, you know, between letting the government do its job and making sure it doesn't overstep its bounds. But how did this case actually play out? I mean, the oil companies won, right? What happened after the Supreme Court made its decision?
Well, it's actually not as straightforward as you might think.
Really?
Yeah. So while the court said that part of the law, Section 9C, was no good, they didn't actually say whether what the president did using that part of the law was wrong.
Oh, interesting. So they basically said Congress messed up, but we're not going to say if the president actually did anything wrong.
Yeah, pretty much. So there were still a lot of questions left unanswered.
Right.
And it meant that the fight wasn't over. The case went back down to the lower courts to figure out what the Supreme Court's decision really meant, you know, on the ground.
Wow. Talk about complicated. So what happened in the end? Did the oil companies get what they wanted?
Well, it's hard to say for sure. The records aren't very clear about what happened in the lower courts, but what we do know is that the Panama refining case kind of faded into the background compared to some of the other big New Deal cases that came later.
Okay, so even if we don't know exactly what happened to Panama refining, the case itself still had a big impact, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like we talked about, it really cemented this idea of the non-delegation doctrine. You know, Congress can't just shirk its duty to make laws. And it also brought up all these important questions about how power is shared between the different parts of the government. And those questions are still debated today.
And we've seen how those questions come up in current legal battles.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to how much power those federal agencies have.
Right. Panama refining is like this reminder, you know, even when things are really tough, you can't just toss the Constitution aside. There's got to be a balance. The government needs to be able to deal with problems, but it can't have unlimited power.
Right. So before we get into all that, you mentioned something earlier about the intelligible principle.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like that's a pretty important idea when it comes to this non-delegation thing. Can you explain that a little more? Like, what exactly does it mean and how has it changed since Panama refining?
Sure. So intelligible principle, it's really at the core of this non-delegation doctrine. Basically, it means that when Congress gives power to the president or to an agency, they have to give them clear instructions. They can't just be super vague.
So kind of like Congress giving the president a to-do list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But those tasks have to be clear, not just like fix the economy.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine you tell someone, go clean the house.
Okay.
That's pretty vague, right? They might not know where to even start.
Yeah.
But if you say, vacuum the living room, dust the shelves, and mop the kitchen floor.
Okay, yeah.
Then they know exactly what you want them to do.
I got it. So how does this intelligible principle apply to Panama refining? It sounds like the court thought those instructions were missing when it came to those oil regulations.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big part of their problem with it. They felt like Congress hadn't given enough direction in Section 9C, so the president had too much power. And Panama refining set a pretty high bar for what counts as an intelligible principle. Later cases, though, the court loosened up a bit.
They did.
Yeah. They realized that Congress can't spell out every single detail of how a law should be put into action.
Okay, so the standard has changed a bit over time.
It has. There's been a lot of debate about how much guidance Congress actually needs to provide.
Can you give some examples of what courts have accepted as good enough guidance in more recent cases?
Sure. Like back in the 1980s, there was this case where the court upheld a law that gave the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, a lot of authority to set standards for air quality. Now, Congress didn't tell them exactly how much pollution was allowed.
Right.
But they did say that the goal was to protect public health.
Okay.
And the court decided that that general goal was a clear enough intelligible principle to guide the EPA.
So it seems like there's this balancing act going on. The courts are trying to respect Congress's right to delegate power, But they also want to make sure that there are some limits on that power.
You got it. And Panama refining, even though it's an old case, is still a really important reference point in this debate.
You mentioned before that the case is still used in legal arguments today.
Right.
Can you tell us more about that? How is Panama refining coming up in legal battles now?
Well, it's definitely a favorite for people who want to limit the power of administrative agencies.
Okay, what does that mean?
So, administrative state, it's this whole network of federal agencies that make and enforce regulations.
I see.
And there are a lot of people who think these agencies have become too powerful, that they have too much control without enough oversight from Congress.
Okay. So how does Panama refining fit into that?
It's kind of like a rallying cry for those folks who think Congress has given away too much power without setting clear enough limits. Justices like Neil Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas, they've cited Panama refining in some recent cases.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like when they were arguing against the CDC's eviction moratorium during the pandemic and OSHA's vaccine mandates for businesses.
So they're saying that those agencies were given too much freedom by Congress, just like the court was worried about back in 1935.
Exactly. They're saying that Panama refining is still relevant today, you know? The government needs to be limited, and Congress needs to give clear instructions.
It's amazing how a case about oil from almost 100 years ago can still be important today.
It really is. It shows how these basic questions about power in our government are always important. And Panama refining, with its focus on the non-delegation doctrine, helps us understand those questions.
Okay, so we've talked about what the majority of the justices thought, what the one who disagreed thought,
right,
and how Panama refining has had a lasting impact. But what about the case itself? Did the oil companies actually win? What happened after the Supreme Court made its decision?
Well, things get a bit messy there.
Really? How so?
Well, the court, you see, they said that Section 9C was unconstitutional.
Right, right.
But they kind of punted on whether the president actually broke the law by using it.
Oh, so they didn't actually rule on if the president's actions were illegal.
Exactly. So it left a lot of unanswered questions
and
meant the legal battle wasn't quite over. The case, you know, went back to those lower courts to sort out what the Supreme Court's decision actually meant in practice.
Wow. So even with a Supreme Court ruling, things can still be complicated.
Oh, absolutely.
So what happened? Did Panama refining, did they get what they were after?
It's not totally clear. The historical record, it's kind of fuzzy on what happened in the end. But what we do know is that Panama refining kind of got overshadowed by some of the other big New Deal cases that came along later.
Okay, so maybe the case itself didn't have a dramatic ending, but we've talked about how it had a huge impact on legal thinking.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like we've been saying, it really put that non-delegation doctrine front and center, you know?
Yeah.
Made it clear that Congress can't just pass off its lawmaking power so easily.
Right, right. They can't just give the president a blank check.
Exactly. And, you know, it raised these big fundamental questions about the balance of power in our government. And those questions are still being debated today.
Yeah, we've seen how those questions are playing out in those modern legal battles over how much power those federal agencies have.
For sure. Panama refining, it's a reminder that even in tough times like the Great Depression, we can't just ignore the Constitution. We've got to find a way to balance giving the government the power to deal with problems with making sure that power is used responsibly, you know, within limits.
So it's like this old case, but it's still super relevant today, almost 100 years later.
It is, you know. It shows us how important clear legislation from Congress is when they're giving power to someone else. It shows how important the courts are, you know, in making sure the government stays within those constitutional boundaries. And it really emphasizes how important it is to keep talking about this balance of power, always making sure we're getting it right.
Yeah, it's not always a simple answer.
Not at all. And that's what makes these cases so interesting, you know? They give us a peek into how our system works, how complex it is, and they make us think hard about how to protect our freedoms while still having a government that can actually get things done.
Well, I've definitely learned a lot today.
Yeah.
We went from the Great Depression to constitutional law to these fundamental questions about power and liberty. It's been quite a journey.
It has. It's been great discussing all this with you.
And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Panama Refining Co. v. Ryan. We'll be back soon with more fascinating legal questions to explore. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.